Okay, so we're learning what's called the section of Prishut, which is Perek Yud Gimel of the Mesilas Yesharim, and we know that Prishut, as he defines at the very beginning of the chapter, is one should separate himself and distance himself from the source of sin. And he claims that that's the beginning of Chassidut, meaning from this chapter and on, the Mesilas Yesharim is talking about things that are not strictly required, but we go beyond. Kadesh atzmecha b'mutalecha, that's the Gemara in Yevamos, that one should sanctify himself by going even further and distancing himself from the source of sin. Now, here's the question that we want to ask. You know, in many cases, we don't have to distance ourselves. The Chachamim instituted various Isurim and Siagos, and they fenced it around, and they did the work for us. You know, for example, there's a law of Yichud. A man is not allowed to be alone in a secluded place with a woman, lest it might lead to a worse violation. So why not, you know, in all these logical conclusions that we come to on a subjective level, you and I, that I should separate myself from this and take upon myself that. Why didn't the Chachamim outsmart me, you know, 2,000 years ago? Why didn't they think of it? You know, why is it so subjective? V'im tishal v'tomar, he says, if you'll ask the following question, im kein, if this is logical, that a person should really stay away from certain things, is that this is something that's tzarich, we need it, mukhrak, it has to be, because otherwise we might come too close to sin, is lama lo gazru al v'chachamim. Why did the chachamim think of it? You know, I have to come along and think that I shouldn't do this because it might lead to that. The chachamim should have instituted these gzeros. In fact, if you take a look at the very beginning of the Mishnah in Avos, the Mishnah in Avos says, asus yog la Torah, that the Chachamim are called upon to create fences. They're not going to rely on us. And here, the Mesilas Yesharim in this parak is presenting a thesis that each and every one of us has to figure out what Kabbalahs we should accept upon ourselves as our chokos. K'mo shegazru al asyogos v'takonah shegazru. In fact, the Chachamim did a very good job. They instituted many, many gzeros, many, many fences around the Torah. So why didn't they go a little bit further? Hine, he says, Hatshuva mivoeres upshuta. He says that, you know what, we're talking about something that has to be subjective, by definition. I can't, the Chachamim can't impose this on you. It would be too much to ask. And this, now I'm going to quote something from the United States of America. If it's sources in England or in South Africa, you let me know. But in America, we have something in the legal system. You tell me if we stole it from the Brits. I don't know. Jeremy, you know a little bit about law. It's in America. It's called the system of checks and balances. Did you ever hear of it? It's an American concept. What does it mean? It means, you know, we have a constitution, and the constitution on the one hand generates or how should I say, projects a certain power and a certain authority to the legislator, the legislative branch. But the constitution wants to guarantee a system of checks and balances. You know, maybe the legislator and the legislation will go a little bit too far. And they'll impose upon, you know, the rank and file citizen something which cannot be accepted. So that's called a system of checks and balances, because what you have is, you have the legislature, and then you have what's called the judiciary. Yes. And then you have the executive. So there are different branches of government, and each branch, in a sense, checks the other one and balances it out. So believe it or not, this concept, which any student of constitutional law in the United States will study this concept, really has its roots way back when in our law. And that's called the law of Gzerah, She'ein Rov HaTzibur Yecholim Lamod Bo. In other words, Chachamim could say, you know, we want a Gzerah. We want to institute a very strict decree, a Harchak HaSiach. We're going to tell the Jewish people they can't walk into a supermarket and buy bread, even if they know the bread is kosher. Even though they know the bread is kosher. So, for example, in America, again, this won't mean anything to you, but there's something called Arnold's White Bread, you know. And it's a Goyish company that produces very good bread. And guess what? It has a Heksher on it. So the Rabbanan, the Gemara tells us at the end of Avodah Zarah, wanted to institute a gzera prohibiting us from eating these breads. Why? Because once you start breaking bread with a non-Jew, you never know, it might lead to parties and banquets, and then who knows down the line where to go. Now, you and I know that to this very day, very religious Jews will eat bread with an OU, even though it was produced and manufactured by Goyim. It's Pas Akum. Okay, during the Aseres Yemei Tshuva, now that we're entering, you know, in just a little bit more than 24 hours, you know, we'll be entering the Aseres Yemei Tshuva, then we take upon ourselves for 10 days that we will avoid Pas Paltu. We will get Pas Yisrael for those 10 days to show Hashem how much we want to be dedicated. But the rest of the year, we could be great tzaddikim with longer buds and payers, and yet we eat non-Jewish bread. Why is that so? And the answer is because the Gemara says that Tzibur couldn't accept that gzeirah. It was too tough for them. And that's what the Nesiv Shalom quotes here. If you take a look, he says, Ki lo gazru chachamim gzeirah, he quotes the Gemara in Bava Kama, Ela im Kain, the only license the chachamim have to institute these harchakos and these siagos, is rov hatzibur yicholim lamod bo. The majority of the Jewish community could withstand and uphold and implement that gzeirah, that decree. But v'ein rov hatzibur yicholim lios chasidim, you can't expect that every last Jew could be a chassid and go beyond the letter of the law. So when the Chachamim felt it was absolutely compelling to make a gzera, and that they felt that in Jewish life, sociologically, the Jewish people would be able to accept it and implement it, then that's exactly what they did. You can rely on them to make the gzera. And they told you not to go into a room with a, you know, private room with a woman that you're not allowed to have relations with. But to go beyond what's normal in our path and impose upon the rank and file Jewish citizen something which he can't accept, he's not in that mode of chassidus, that they didn't do. So what happens? They leave it to every individual. Avol dai lahem sheyu tzadikim. It's enough if they are tzaddikim, meaning they uphold the strict letter of the law. And that's fine. Ach hasridim asher ba'am, those individuals who are exceptional, they are not the rank and file. They are the, you know, we call them the super dupers. You know, these are the guys that are so charedi, you know, they take upon themselves all sorts of extreme chumras. Hachafetzim, and their whole desire, their existential desire is lizkos. All they want is to merit l'kirvaso yisbarach. They always want to be close to Hashem. They want to stand in front of Hashem. Shivisei Hashem l'negdi sovah. They're always in the presence of God, 24/7. They don't think about anything else. Whatever they think about, it's only in order to, as a means to an end, to get close to Hashem. Ulazakos bischusam lechol shar hamon hanitle b'hem, and everyone else depends upon them. So they are being mezake. They are giving merit to the rest of the tzibur. These are the holy people. We call them, I don't know if you're familiar with the phrase, klei kodesh. Klei kodesh are those who separate themselves from the rest of the community in order to dedicate themselves to the community. They're going to be the teachers, and they're going to be the poskim and the dayanim. They are going to sit in positions of hashpa, and they are going to bring merit to the rest of Klal Yisrael. Lahem, and when it comes to that group, is magia, it makes sense, l'kayim mishnas chassidim, that they would want to fulfill even the approach of chassidim, which we've been talking about here in Midas HaPrishus, asher lo yuchlu l'kayim l'acherim, that will not be able to be maintained by others. Only these, we call them yechidei skula. These are the exceptional individuals that form, in a sense, the atlas carrying the community on their shoulders because of vezchus. Because they're always standing in front of Hashem. They're always getting closer and closer to Hashem. They can take upon themselves to be makayim chasidus and be very, very pious. Heim heim sidrei aprishus ha'ela, and this is what we've been suggesting here in this chapter in the book Mesilas Yesharim, sidrei aprishus, the sequence and the order to create this framework. Ki bazeh boch Hashem, because these are the chosen of the chosen. And again, we can't expect everyone to bring themselves to that great level, because the people of Israel are made up of many different parts and, you know, many different levels, madregos, madregos. But there are these Yechidei Skula, these exceptional individuals who are fire and brimstone. They're totally dedicated to Hashem. I just want to add a comment of my own here. And again, I'm not trying to prejudice you with my prejudices, but the Yechidei Skula have to be very careful about one thing. You see, as soon as they separate themselves from the people, and they're on a higher level, and they accept upon themselves Prishus and Chassidus, there's always a danger of what I call a setback, you know, a boomerang theory. It might boomerang. Because I'll tell you why. Sometimes a person is tempted to think that, you know what, I'm on the top of the top, right? I'm all the way on the top of the totem pole.
Yeah.
And you know what? I'm very important. I'm the greatest. You know, it gets to the head a little bit.
Yeah.
Like, for example, I'll tell you a story. I like to tell stories. You don't mind, do you? I don't know. No? Okay. I don't want to get into trouble with the authorities here. You know?
It's a Rabbi Meir's life, I think, so.
Good. Okay, great. So I'm going to stand around Rabbi Meir's shoulders here.
Is it recorded?
Yeah. My father says the following. That his father was very concerned, and he was not so excited, shall we say, that's an understatement, about a certain yeshiva, a major yeshiva that was established in his neighborhood. My father came from an area in Russia that was called Lithuania. I don't know if you ever heard of it. Well, if you're South African, then everybody's Lithuanian. Yeah.
Well,
he came from a small shtetl called Plisa, but it was near a big city called Vilna. And it was not far from another city called Slabodka. And there was a gigantic yeshiva. And the mashgiach was very famous. He had a tremendous impact on hundreds, if not thousands, of students. And even to this day, he still is influencing, even after his death, you know, students and students of students. And when he would give a shmooze, his musa shmooze was about the totem pole. What was the totem pole? He says that all of the universe is made up of different levers that climb higher and higher and higher, like a pyramid. On the very bottom of the universe is what's called domain. Domain means carbon, you know, physical objects. And then, after that, you get to chai. Chai means the animal kingdom. They're on a higher level. And then, I'm sorry, I skipped one. After domain, you have tzomeach. Tzomeach are the plants, you know, the botanical world. They grow, but you know, they don't have any intelligence whatsoever. And then you get to the higher level, which is called chai, the animal kingdom. It has some level of intelligence, but they can't speak. And then you get to the highest level in this pyramid, which is called the medaber. And that's man. Man can speak. So this we knew even before the mashgiach spoke. But what did the mashgiach add? He said, you think that this pyramid ends at Medaber? He says, no. It goes even higher and higher. Because amongst the Medabrim, there are different levels. They're the rest of the world, and then there's the chosen people, the Jewish people. They have the Torah, the Dibarta, Bam. Their Dibur is on a whole different plane. They speak Dvar Hashem, the words of Hashem. And he says, you think that we've reached the top of the pyramid? Oh no. Even amongst Klal Yisrael, there are different levels. Why? Because of the Torah scholars that are dedicated to the Dvar Tabam, to speak about Torah. And you think we're at the top of the pyramid? He used to say, no. Amongst the B'nai Torah, our yeshiva, our students are on the highest level. So my grandfather used to say the following. This part of the shmooze, I can't till this point, the students understood and they implemented. But then the mashgiach would add another piece. You're on the top of the pyramid. Imagine how you have to behave. Everyone's looking up to you. You could be Makadei Shem Shamayim with your actions. Or the reverse, if you... That part of the shmooze, sometimes they forgot. That was my grandfather's time. He said, they would remember that we're on the top of the pyramid. You
know?
Yeah, for sure. Okay, anyway, so that's the thing. You know, once you get into Midas HaChassidus, and you're talking about these great people, they have to realize that their greatness is because they are together with the people, together with the community, they're teachers of the community, they're influencing the community. They should not lift themselves above the community.
So I'll tell you a story. I'm a travel agent.
Right.
Many years ago, some Tommy came and said, my Rebbe wants to go. Okay, this is your favorite when he comes back. Okay, Rebbe. Right. Came back, waited.
No check in the mail, huh?
So my boss said, go to the Rebbe and ask for a bracha. So, went in the big, big room, and in the little room, and the guy said, how much do you want to donate to the Rebbe? I said, I have to donate to the Rebbe when he has to pay me.
What?
I said, go ask the Rebbe if he went overseas. And if he's paid
for it.
And the Rebbe never filled off his check.
What?
I didn't pay you.
That's an interesting thing. Yeah, the Gemara says in at the end of Masechta Yuma that the Talmidei Chachamim should not buy on credit because in case they don't remember, you know, they might forget and not pay off. It's a terrible thing. That's right. So the Masechta Yisham says she came on she efshal uma. You can't expect the entire nation shetia kula shavu b'mayla achas. It should all be equal on that very very high level. Ki yesh bahem yesh ba'am. There are amongst the people of the nation madregos different levels. Each b'fi sichlo. Each person is endowed with his level of intelligence, his capacity, his potential. Hinei lefachot. At least we have amongst the people of Israel yechidei skula. These are the exceptional few. Yimatsu, you can find them. You have to look for them high and low, but they are there. Asher yachinu es atzman, they prepare themselves morally, ethically. Hachanag murah, with a tremendous, you know, program of moral exercises and training to train themselves. Val yidea muchanim, and once we have these individuals who are on that level that they can accept chasidut and implement it, yizku gama bilti muchanim, even those who are not ready for that level, they too will merit el avato yitbarach, they will get and gain the love of God. May be exalted and blessed. Vashra'at Shechinato, and they also come close to the Shechina. In other words, through the greats, the other people will also benefit and be uplifted and be inspired. And that's what Chazal said about Moshe Rabbeinu, that Moshe Rabbeinu was Mezakes HaRabim, that he taught Torah, transmitted the Torah to others, and any contact with Moshe Rabbeinu allowed for the people to be uplifted. And Moshe Rabbeinu had to be very careful. He had to realize that his role is vis-a-vis the people. You're great, Moshe Rabbeinu, and you're the greatest. But you have to realize that your greatness is also tied in, it's verbunden, as we say, it's completely intertwined with the greatness of Israel. That's why, what did Hashem say to Moshe Rabbeinu after 40 days up on the mountain, when the people of Israel were worshipping the angel? Do you remember the two words? Lech raid. Raid means go down. So Chazal say, why did Hashem say lech raid? He knew lech that he had to go down. He was up in the mountain. Raid mi gdulascha. Go down from your greatness. Aim gdulascha el etluya b'gdulas Yisrael. You are the leader of the people. And as the leader of the people, your impact on the people, your influence on the people is what gives you greatness. Your stature is a reflection of how much you can impact. If they go down, then you go down with them. He says, he says, "Ukeinyon shedarshu zichron levrach." We find the Medrash Rabbah says with regard to Arba Mina, you know, each one of the four species represents a different sector of the population, and you know, you have the Arava, which is the on one polar extreme. Arava, the Chazal say in the Medrash, "Ein lo tam v'lo reach." It has no taste. It has no smell. At least the Hadassim, if they don't have a taste, they have a smell, and the lulav has a taste, but it has no smell. And then finally we get on the other polar extreme to the esrog that has a taste and a smell. And these represent different people of Klal Yisrael. That's why, you know, on Oshana Rabbah we clap with what? With the Arava. Because the Arava represents the Pshutei Av, some of the Poshe Yisrael sometimes who have no tam, no reach. And we got to clap them, we got to wake them up. But the ultimate goal is to be like an esrog Jew. Again, it's got to be an esrog without blemishes, right? But a beautiful esrog that has tam and has reach. I would say that reach represents the almost indirect influence that a chacham, that a scholar has on others. Even if he's not teaching them, his very presence has an impact and uplifts them. I don't know if you've ever had this experience. I was once hosting, my wife and I were hosting Sheva Brachas for one of my close friends who had just gotten married, and the Rosh Hashiva came in. He's not alive anymore. I remember when the Rosh Hashiva came in,
All of a sudden, it changed the whole atmosphere. The whole ambiance changed. Even though we didn't hear a word of Torah from him at that point, later on he spoke, but we were uplifted. Yeah. Did you ever have that experience? Did you ever? Yeah. Was a great person walks into the room and like, you can feel it. It's almost tangible. It's electric. And that's called Reach. Reach means someone with a great fragrance comes and everyone enjoys the smell. And then there's something called Tam. Tam means you have to eat the esrog. Again, I don't eat esrogim. I find them very bitter, but they make jam out of it. I don't know if you've ever seen. So esrog jam. And during Shavuos, which is not this year's esrogim, but next year's esrogim, you know, I'm going to have to make jam out of the esrog because we don't want to get rid of an esrog that has kedusha Shavuos and throw it in the garbage, in the rubbish. We have to make jam out of it. Anyway, so that's the pshat that you can actually taste. Taste is a much more, how should I say, intimate or direct connection. So the Chacham, the Talmud Chacham, has to have the ability to give every member of his community a taste of Kiddush, of sanctity. Not just being fragrant like Reach, you know, he's got to also give them the taste. Tamuru ki tov Hashem, they should be able to really sink their teeth into it. He gives them a svara, he gives them a lumdus, he gives them a piece of, he gives them a musashmuz or a drasha, and he has direct contact with it. He touches the people. And Moshe Rabbeinu, again, during his career, played different roles. There were times in his career that he was very much involved with the community on an intimate basis. You remember that Yisro came to claim and complain about the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu, they were standing to greet him online, like you said, the Rebbe, you know, we're all coming in to see Moshe Rabbeinu. There were other times where Moshe Rabbeinu pitched his tent outside the Machna. He felt he needed that withdrawal. But ultimately, we need to be like the Esrog. And the Esrog means Yeshbo Tam, the Yeshbo Reach. That's all I think they hinted in this one little line in the Mesilas Yesharim. Ukvar Matsanu Lelio Anavi Zochru Latov Sha'omel Rabbi Yeshua Ben Levi Maisa De'ula Bar Koshev Kishay Shivo Velo Mishnei Afhu Omerlo V'chi Mishnas Chasidim Hi. So this is a Yushalmi in Trumos, and the Rash quotes it, and there's a whole discussion here, as there frequently was, between Eliyahu and Navi, because Chazal say Eliyahu and Navi Lomes, and Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. And basically, every time Eliyahu and Navi meets Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, he conveys to him the message that if you want to be a chassid, Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, you have to have a positive impact on those who are around him. Aval aprishus hara, he says that every good attribute could be used for the opposite. So if you separate yourself and it's bad, who kiderech hascholim, he says this is reflective of the scholim, means literally imbeciles. Asher lo dai she'enam lokchim min ha'olam asher lehem hechrech bo, ela shekvar yimnu me'atzom gamas ha'muchach. He says some people are idiosyncratic. They're stupid about the way they go about doing this. You know, it's one thing to separate yourself from something that's not necessary. It's a luxury item, and you can live without it. Ain't b'hem hechrech bo. They don't have an absolute need for it. But they go too far with this. They take it to its extreme. And they enjoin themselves from things that they have to eat, or they have to enjoy. They need it for their psychological and physical health. The yasru gufam, and they impose affliction and pain on their bodies, bisurim, with suffering. Udvarim zarin, and they do things that are totally foreign or alien to our customs. I mean, the most extreme case would be, you know, the Isur Lav of Lotus Godudu, you know, to cut into yourself. I mean, these are crazinesses. And he says, El Adrab Chachomim Omru Adam Asuli Adam L'shiyasagif Atzmo. There are people who want to take on fasts and deny themselves eating and drinking, and they're not capable of doing so. And the Chachamim say, that's usur, that's prohibited. He thinks he's a great tzaddik. You know, he fasts. He takes upon himself all these yisurim and sigufim. He's extreme in his precious. No! Chachamim say that that's usur. God gave us the world to enjoy, and we need the enjoyment of the world. And I'm always reminded of the famous story about Rabbi Yisrael Salanta, the founder of the Musar movement. That he made a very interesting remark when he heard a story. There was a story about a certain tzaddik in town, in a certain city, back in Poland, who used to fast. Not just fasting from eat and drink. You know, there's a more difficult, challenging fast. You know what I'm referring to? Exactly, tainis dibur. He had a tainis dibur.
the man had a tainis din, which means he would only speak that which is absolutely necessary with divrei Torah for 40 years. And then, after the 40 years, an incident happened in that town, and it was some sort of question about, you know, there was an accusation against some member of the community, and for the first time in 40 years, this man spoke up. And he said, that guy is a no good scoundrel, and he should be put behind bars, and he slandered him, and so forth and so on. Later on, they found out that the whole thing was not true, and they tried to clear this man's reputation, but it was very difficult, because after all, this guy was known as the saint in town for 40 years. So when they told the story to Rabbi Yisrael Salant, he said, this man thought he was doing tzikas for 40 years with Tainis Dibur. It was all the Eitzah of the Eitzah Hara. It was the evil inclination. Because had he not fasted for 40 years, maybe his slander wouldn't have the impact that it had. But because he did the Tainis Dibur, therefore his Lashon Hara was so powerful. That's what Rabbi Yisrael said. And then he says, Ubinyan at Stoka. Amru Chazal tells us in the Yerushalmi Peyer, Kol Misha Tzarech Litol Vieina Notel. A person is poor, he's destitute, but he has his Kavod Atzmi, how do you say in English, his self-respect, exactly, and therefore he refuses to take Tzedaka. Now, look, if he wants to suffer, that's one thing, but what about his family? They can starve to death. His Hareza Shofech Tomei. So you see that any good thing, if it's taken to an extreme, it becomes a distortion of the truth. Yeah, we don't want to take tzedakah. The Gemara says that a person should do everything he can to try to avoid tzedakah. Even if he has to take upon himself a malacha bzuya. Yeah, he's got to, I don't know what, clean the streets or whatever it is. And the Gemara goes further. The Gemara says, Asei Shabbat chachol v'altitztarech lebrios. You know, if you don't have enough money to make a banquet for which covered Shabbos, so eat the potatoes. I don't care what. Eat hard bread if you have to. But altitztarech lebrios. What happens? A person gets to that situation where he doesn't have food to eat and he can't feed his family. And he wants to go to this extreme and say, no, I have too much self-respect, I'm not going to put my hand out and accept tzedakah, even though the tzedakah from the community has to be given, to be had, he's a shofech domin. V'cheina amru, the Gemara tells us in a different place in Masechta Tainis, that l'nefesh chaya, that man was created as a nefesh chaya, he's a soul that's alive, is the Gemara says, neshama shenasati b'cha hachyeyosa, I gave you a spirit, a soul, make sure it lives. And the Yomar, the Gemara says, defayoshiv v'tainis, he's not healthy about the upkeep of his body, nikra chote, he is a sinner. V'midua b'dalo motzi mitzar nafshe. And the Gemara says, it's a case where somebody couldn't take the suffering that he took upon himself. Self-inflicted, self-imposed suffering, and he's just falling apart. He can't do it. He's a chote. The Gemara even accuses, if you remember, a Nazir who took upon himself this midah precious that he has to bring a karma chatas because chot al nefesh, which nefesh? Al nafsho. Maybe he wasn't on the level to deny himself those pleasures in life which a Nazir is enjoying from the Hillel Haya Omer, the famous statement of Hillel, based on the Pasuk in Mishlei. The Pasuk in Mishlei says, Gomel nafsho ish chesed. Hillel says, what does it mean that a person does chesed to his own soul? He treats his own soul the way he should. Al achilas haboker. That's breakfast. You know, some people go without breakfast. Well, maybe Erev Rosh Hashanah we can go without breakfast. Some people. I don't know. What do you say? Pat shachris. So he denies himself pat shachris. Right? So he's not doing chesed to his own nefesh. And Hillel said, you know, I will eat my pat shachris. Rochets panavirolov. And he would wash himself. Lichvod Kono, he knows that he stands in front of his maker. That's why I told you about the yeshiva in Slabodka before. You know, the yeshiva students in Slabodka were known to dress very fancy, beautifully. You won't believe this. I don't know if you ever saw a picture of it. They wore top hats.
Yeah.
Top hats. And they didn't call themselves yeshiva bochum. They called it was yeshiva man.
Yeshiva
man, like Superman, you know. They knew that they were standing in front of their makers. You know, Chazal say that when Adam HaRishon was created, the Malach Yashoras wanted to bow down to him. They thought that he was a God figure. Okay, later on he sinned, and then God, you know, Chasav Kapo, he squashed him. You know, honey, I shrunk the Kavachomer midyoknonos hamalachim. the melech, the king, has to look beautiful. He has to have a countenance and a radiance. He has to dress carefully. That's what we say on Yom Kippur. A melech is allowed to wash himself. And if a melech who's only dedicated to his people on a political level has to be treated on that level, how much more so Hillel, who's close to Hashem? So he has to look good. My father, Zichron Levracha, never left the house without a tie. I said, Dad, you're going down the street to put something in the post box. You have to put on your tie. So my father said to me, I feel naked without my tie.
My grandfather would never open the front door without a jacket.
Unbelievable. Some people have this. And you should know, you might think that Hillel was known for his gaiva, you know, for his haughtiness. On the contrary, Hillel was considered the walking, living paradigm of humility. Midas Hanov of Hillel was second only to Moshe Rabbeinu, one of Mikolano. But yet he felt it's very important for a person to wash himself, present himself cleanly. And my friends, this goes even further. Anything that has sanctity should be treated in a clean way. The city of Yerushalayim has Kedusha. It bothers me tremendously when you see people throwing things and the rubbish is all over. You see even young children and they throw wrappers around. Yeah, somebody should give a musa shmuz on the ramkol of the whole Yerushalayim Rabosai. Don't you realize there's Kedusha, there's sanctity to Yerushalayim? Treat it properly.
This is your house.
And beautify it. Harelecha, let's see if we can finish the perek. Harelecha, haklal, ha-miti. I want to give you the rule. You know, this is going to be the finale of the entire chapter. This is the true, genuine, capsulized, concise form of the rule. Kol ma'ashenu mukhakli adam. All the luxury items and the pleasures that are not necessary. You don't need them physically or psychologically. Binyanei olam hazeh, with regard to this world. Ro'i lo shi'yifrosh mihem, if he's a chassid and he wants to go beyond the letter of the law, he should separate himself from these pleasures, because pleasures are alluring. The Gemara tells about Rabbi Elazar ben Arach, one of the great Tanoim, that he got so involved in those days. You know, the Greeks, the Romans, had these bathhouses. You know, today we call them the spas. Have you ever been to these places? In Israel, they're unbelievable. I don't know, in Chutzon.
How long in Israel?
I'm here, my son, my oldest is 36 years old, yeah, 37
years. You don't remember Chol HaFester?
Oh, sure, what was it called, the Turkish band.
Yeah.
The Turkish band, sure, I have a picture of me and my friend Rav Naftali Yeager. We were students, he's now a great Rosh Hashiva in America, so, and we're standing outside the Turkish baths, yeah. The truth is that Rav Elazar ben Arach was so enticed by this whole lifestyle, he started going on a very limited level, but you know how it works. You know, you try once and it's good, and you try likes. That's why there's such a thing called addiction, because people get addicted. He says, Roy Lifrosh Mehem, stay away from these addictive kind of pleasures that allure a person and suck him in. You know, Chazal say, Ein onem chote el nichnas bo ruach shtus. It means a person doesn't sin unless some stupidity, you know, some ruach, a spirit, a wind of stupidity enters into himself. So I once heard from Rav Chaim Shulevitz, he said the following. He said, imagine if you have a deep pit, very dangerous. So he says that as long as you stay a distance from the pit, you're not going to fall in. But if you come too close because you're very curious, you want to see what's inside the pit, then the slightest wind can just push you over the edge and boom, you fall down to the abyss. And what brings you to that edge? Because you're curious. People have a curiosity, and sometimes the curiosity brings them too close to something, and then just the slightest wind can push them over the ledge. He says, Ach mishpat, Ha-protim. He says, I've given you the klal, the reliable, loyal klal. He should be poresh mimenu. But then there's something that's mukhrach that he has to do and he must have. He shouldn't be poresh, he's a chote. Ach mishpat ha-protim, he says, you want to get down to the nitty-gritty details. Al-pi ha-klal azaz, you apply it. Eino masur, I can't do that for you. There are too many millions of scenarios, the infinite myriad of scenarios. I can't address them all. El shikul adas. Now that's what they say. Rabbi Yisrael Salanta, the founder of the Muslim movement, used to say that the first mitzvah in the Torah,
Abisal Sech,
Zaynish Kinari used to say, don't be a stupid thing. You've got to use your shikul adas. And you could spend an entire lifetime of moral training in order to build up your shikul adas. You know, people think you only have to train, you know, if you're in physical sports. No, you have to train the morality. And there are setbacks. There are setbacks. A person thinks he's getting higher and on the scale and he's more solid, and then all of a sudden, boom, he falls. And the pasuk says, Sheva of Tzadik Yipol, Sheva Pom Yitzadik Yipol, that we fall and we fall, but we get up again. And we can't get too down on ourselves, because then we get to low self-esteem, and that's very dangerous. He says, "Ach mishpat ha-protival kalaza enu moso l'shikol adas l'fi sichlo yuhulal ish." Man will be praiseworthy according to his seichel. He uses his seichel yosher. He's not a nar. Ki efshal l'kavitz kol protival. I can't gather together all the details. Ki rabim heim. They're very. This reminds me of the tefillah zaka. You know, I can't mention all my sins because rather they're too many. V'ein seichel adam yochel ha-hakiv es kulam el dover dover bi. So everyone, as they're faced by the challenge, has to come up with the proper response and the behavior pattern that's appropriate in that situation and for that person. There's no set pattern for everybody. We have to spend our life trying to develop those moral skills, and Hashem should help us. And with Siyata Deshmaya, we'll create a fortitude, a power, of an energy force within each and every one of us, of becoming a person who can rise, who can climb the ladder, miyala b'har Hashem, until we reach the level of chassidus and the proper precious keni ratzon. So we'll take a break now, and Yimirtz Hashem in about 3-4 minutes. Is that good enough? If you can get a hold of the Gemara Yuma, we'll have a very nice sugya to learn. Yeah, I'll tell you exactly. I think it's Pei Beis.